Okay, so let's get rolling. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Guess who's 24 years old today, Tom Gimbel?
Good to be with you, John. It's nice to feel young again.
The founder and CEO of LaSalle Network, thelasallenetwork.com. Tom isn't 24, but LaSalle Network is that right?
That's exactly right. 24 years ago tomorrow, actually, I was the first day I walked into the office.
Was it somebody else's office or was it your office?
No, it was our office. I started the company. We had rented a small office at 111 West Washington Street and had about 1,500 or 2,000 square feet. I had two employees. And August 17th, 1998 is when it all started.
How many clients did you have then?
Zero. Zero. So I had a non-compete agreement. And started from scratch and had to build up my client roster from scratch. And 24 years later, we've done business with almost 10,000 clients. We do business with over 1,500 per year, and we do over $100 million in revenue. So it's been a really fun run.
What kind of clients do you have? Who are your customers?
We do business with some of the largest consumer packaged good companies in the country, food manufacturers, and we also do business with startups. We do business with technology startups out of 1871, and some of the unicorns in Chicago have been some of our best clients, and sometimes some of our worst, quite frankly, when they haven't done so well. But they've been. We really model our business as finding talent, and then we figure out if a company's culture is the right culture for us to work with, and then go from there.
So, do you like the phrase headhunter? What do you call yourself? What do you do?
Well, we've got two sides of our business. We've got the recruiting side, which is good old-fashioned headhunting, and then we've got staffing, which is interim and temporary staffing, all in the white-collar space. And I think, you know, sometimes whether you prefer it or not, it's what's going to give you recognition or name recognition. People know what you do. And headhunting is defined as going into companies and recruiting people out. And so there is a very large portion of our business that is that. And I'm not as worried about monikers as I am by results. And that's kind of been my motto for the past 24 years.
Yeah, well, what else? 24 years, how has the business changed or what have you learned? What are the keys?
Well, it's funny. When we started the business, or when I started the business in 98, I remember it vividly because, not to give another station a blast, but you know, they're not in business anymore, Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio. And they started their show, and they were in the Radio Hall of Fame. And I remember driving in at 6 o'clock in the morning every day, most days, and listening to them and realizing that we're on longer than Hall of Famers. And I watched the industry change from a standpoint of, there's been some really great companies that come into the landscape, but they don't stay on, and they don't stay in the business. They either sell the company or the owners lose focus or what have you. And it's been my greatest joy outside of my children to be in this industry, in this company, and to build it and to grow it. And I've made some of the best friends in the world here.
I'll let you go, but probably some bromide, some sort of staple statement that was going to sound cliche, but is probably true that you've learned is what? You know, treat people right, something like that. What's the key?
Yeah, I think how you treat people is important in any business, but I would tell you that in a professional career outside of treating people right, I think the number one thing is your work ethic is the only thing that puts you on an even playing ground with other people. You know, I wasn't the best athlete and I wasn't the smartest student, but my work ethic, I could control that, how hard I worked and how often I worked and how long I worked. And if I had to say of those things, I'd like to think I have some natural ability, but I think it's the work ethic that allows people to be really successful.
TheLaSalleNetwork.com. Tom Gimbel's the founder and CEO. Happy birthday to everybody over there, Tom.
I appreciate it, John. Thanks for the plug, and we'll talk to you next week. Be healthy.
Stephen Esposito joins us now. Let's talk about cyclicals. You have talked about them with us before, Stephen. What are cyclicals?
Hello, and thank you again for having me on. Cyclicals are companies that are really cyclical, of course, in nature to the economy. So if the economy does better, they will. And if the economy does worse, they will as well. So they're pretty much directly tied. So something we've talked about, like you said, for months. It's just an area of the market that I think represented really good value, and it's paying off pretty well right now. So that's good news.
Yeah. By the way, Stephen is the executive director, wealth advisor, and senior portfolio management director at Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest. But not all companies do that. Not all companies sort of mirror the markets.
No, I'm kind of an anomaly. I do my own research here. I've been, doing it for decades, and I like to do my own research. So I don't really follow any one group or situation. So going in here and picking a cycle, because I'm a contrarian by nature and a value manager, so I look for companies people don't like that are really undervalued and where they are in the economic cycle. And I just felt, really, since the beginning of the year, it's an area you want to look at and really look for bargains in. And that's what's starting, the market's starting to shift. What we're seeing is money shifting from those favorite tech names into those companies related to the economy as we head into the second half of the year, because they're likely going to do very well.
What's an example of a cyclical then?
Just look at anything in the automobile sector. You could look at anything in the retail sector. Travel, things along those lines that will benefit from a pickup in the economy, obviously for the consumer. And that's where I'm looking. And that's the area that we've talked about in the past. I like the financials. The financials to me are very cheap. They're in great financial condition, and they're just not reflecting what I think value is. And if the economy surprises to the upside and inflation surprises to the downside, which it seems to be doing, that sets us up really well for a really good rally in the fourth quarter in that sector of the market, which is where I'm at.
People have money to spend on clothes and shoes and toys and gadgets and cars, I guess, provided they can get those on the lot.
No, absolutely. And I think they're coming. I heard this morning again that, remember all those tankers that were off the California coast that were trying to get in and deliver? There's nothing there anymore. So they're all caught up. That'll start to come through. And I think inflation is definitely starting to come down. You see it in a lot of the numbers. We've been surprising on the downside inflation. The consumer surprising on the upside, which most of Wall Street was not predicting. So when you're on the other side of that and it works out, a lot of people have to come over to where you're at to catch up to what's underneath the market. And I do believe we're going to see a stealth bull market, or already starting to, in the sectors that are not dominating the indices. It's going back to stock picking, not just indexes. And I think that's what you have to look at.
It's funny because during the pandemic, it was a handful of stocks, like literally five, that kept the markets alive. Now it sounds like you're saying it'll be the opposite of that, a broader spectrum of stocks that will keep the market up.
Absolutely. I thought back in those days, during all of the last 3 years, that was mostly a stealth bear market, where the majority of companies were definitely negative. And you, as you said, you had a handful of names that dominate the indexes in terms of their weighting, which is giving the false impression that the market overall was doing well, and it wasn't. And now I think you're seeing the reverse of that as the economy improves and people reevaluate what they're paying for a dollar of earnings, or really no earnings in many cases, and they're just restructuring how they're thinking. And if that continues, that bodes very well for us, because that's where we're positioned right now. And they pay a lot of good dividends too, by the way. Some pretty good yields out there you can get in some of these companies.
People have money to spend on these things?
I mean, as far as their products, if each, you're seeing the consumer continues to baffle the experts with their strength. There's trillions of dollars sitting in their checkbooks right now. The banks will verify that for you. The interest rate people are now earning that nobody's talking about for some reason is now money markets are paying a pretty good interest rate, over 2%. So all those trillions of dollars that have been earning no interest for all these years are now actually earning some money, and that's going to affect the consumer as well, or the pension plans or other retirement plans. And in Europe, remember, they were negative interest rates where they were actually paying to keep their money there. Now they're getting money in. So I think that's – nobody's talking about how positive that's going to be on the economy. It's not great, but it's sure better than it was.
What's the Achilles heel to all of your optimism here?
Something comes out of left field I can't see coming, whether it be something from the Middle East, from China, from Russia, anything like that, I just can't predict.
Yeah.
Who knows anymore? But you always maintain a certain level of cash. You always got to look over your shoulder, so to speak, when you're managing money. I don't try to hit it out of the park. I try to get singles and doubles. I'll even take a walk, just get a man on base. And I think that's how wealth management needs to be. So unless something comes out, I think you're going to see better numbers in September. The Fed may do less increase than they think, which would be a positive. And then as you go on and continue to get better consumer numbers, you could see a real snowball into the market by year end, because I don't think investors are positioned this way. And if you surprise them, they need to get in to compete with their benchmarks, that could cause a really good fourth quarter rally in that group.
Stephen Esposito is the executive director and wealth advisor, senior portfolio, portfolio management director at Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest. Stephen, it's always good to hear you. Thanks for your help and thoughts today.
Well, thank you for having me. Take care.
Juliana Kaplan joins us now, labor and inequality reporter at insider.com. Juliana, you're on WGN.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
What's it? Your title is interesting to me. I understand labor reporters. What's an inequality reporter?
Mostly reporting on income inequality and disparities.
And is there something to that right now? It seems to me like there's always income inequality. There's the haves and the have-nots, and then there's the C-suites and the regular workers. What do you focus on when you write about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think most recently, it's definitely been a lot of coverage around conditions of the pandemic and the way that that continues and is still really unevenly felt, especially in economic recovery.
You wrote the other day, workers have been forced to take time off because of COVID, have lost $28 billion in wages. People who had to take time off because of COVID didn't earn money. I guess that's $28 billion lost to the economy in terms of potential purchasing power, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely a big impact on the economy, and that's obviously on these workers as well, who, to your point, are disproportionately lower income.
And what about that? I mean, have we factored that in already? We just had a guest on a little while ago who was pretty optimistic about retail purchases down the road. I thought those people were kind of made whole anyway. There were all sorts of PPPs, et cetera, to try and help people out.
Yeah, I mean, there was a pretty unprecedented level of stimulus during this pandemic, certainly. But we still dealt with what was called a K-shaped recovery throughout. And this is a really good example of that. So, you know, if you think of the shape of a K, it's the people who are already on an upward trajectory, so people who are higher earners and more likely to be able to work from home, for instance, were making a lot more, seeing their jobs recover a whole lot quicker, and then obviously sort of the opposite for lower earners. But yeah, that being said, a lot more people had a lot more money in their bank accounts, but as I'm sure your listeners are very familiar with, we now have a lot of inflation as well, which has certainly dimmed how much that's worth.
Yeah, it's so much reporting has been obviously and necessarily done on inflation, but I have thought about it in terms of that K-shaped recovery, that's an annoying number for some, and it's devastating for others. You know, some people can either shop around the inflated prices or simply absorb them. And for some people, it's an either-or decision. Well, I can't get this because I had to get that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's all very unevenly felt. And it's also, if you think about the safety nets and who has access to generational wealth or who doesn't have to pay rent because they own a house as well, for instance, if we see rent prices going up, it's all sort of connected.
You also wrote that the Democrats' big climate and tax bill that the president is signing today could somehow end up making your tax refund come a little quicker. What are you talking about there? How are those connected?
Yeah, so that is a great question. And basically, I'm sure a lot of your listeners have experiences based on the pure numbers alone, but the IRS has been really bogged down. And this is, you know, sort of another example of the pandemic making things worse. So for the last couple of decades, the IRS has seen its funding consistently like drop off. At the same time, their staffing levels have fallen to 1970s levels, while there's more and more and more tax returns coming in every single year. And this has already made the IRS super strained. Like, for reference, they're using 1960s technology over there. Like, you can look it up. There are IRS cafeterias full of paper. All this to say, when the pandemic hit, the IRS, as everyone probably remembers, was responsible for distributing stimulus checks and then child tax credits as well. At the same time, you know, they were trying to figure out work from home. That led to this huge backlog of unprocessed tax returns. And that meant that people weren't getting their refunds because their tax returns hadn't been processed. So they still have this huge backlog. They're supposed to get to it by the end of this year, but you know, millions of people waiting on their tax refunds for months now. And we know from the data that tax refunds are of particular significance to lower income people. Their bank accounts, you know, basically balloon once they receive them. A lot of people put it towards things like healthcare, rent, utilities. So that's been a pretty big issue as well. But to return to your original question, the new bill is putting $80 billion into the IRS, and some of that funding will go directly towards services and modernization to make sure that the IRS can actually process your tax return.
It's funny because when people talk about the money that is directed to the IRS, it was to have more agents, to do more audits, to collect more money to pay for that bill. I'm agnostic about that, but if in the long run that also modernizes the equipment or has more people simply processing returns, then hooray for that. It's ridiculous. We have listeners who are still waiting for last year's tax return. I think there's some people waiting for 2 years ago. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did a whole article a couple months back on people who are waiting on tax returns for family members who have passed away, like, years ago. And, you know, they can't close out, like, their dead mom's bank account because the return won't be able to go anywhere. So it's pretty wild.
You can read all of this at insider.com. That's encouraging and kind of an angle I hadn't anticipated. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Juliana Kaplan is a labor and inequality reporter at insider.com. Juliana, thanks for your time today. Well done.
Thank you so much.
It's 1244. This is WGN Radio. More business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. There are some high-profile comings and goings to report on North Michigan Avenue. Swiss crystal and jewelry maker Swarovski has announced it's returning to the Magnificent Mile. The company had closed stores there in recent years. Cranes reports the chain is moving into 630 North Michigan, a location formerly occupied by Rolex. Meanwhile, jewelry retailer Cartier is closing its store on Michigan Avenue and will move to Oak and Rush. And Timberland has closed its store at 625 North Michigan. Another recent arrival is Aritzia, a Canadian women's apparel company, which is moving into the former Gap location. The Mag Miles retail vacancy rate is up to 28.8% from 26% last year and 15% in 2019. Grill company Weber will cut its workforce by at least 10%, according to a new restructuring plan reportedly in the works. The Palatine-based company will focus the cuts on non-manufacturing and distribution, including senior executives, says Ad Age. The restructuring comes as Weber net sales tumbled 21% in the quarter ended June 30th. Weber has blamed the drop on slower retail traffic, both in-store and online, because of inflation and supply chain constraints. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Steve Alexander has the business of food.
Yes, and we are sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Today, we honor a woman rightfully known in Chicago and nationwide as the Queen of Sports Marketing. Nova Langtry is her name, and she retired after a stellar career that began when, Nova?
1986.
And there is a business of food connection, which I'll get to later. Nova grew up on the Northwest Side and started her career as a talent agent before sports marketing was even a thing.
Michael Jordan did that for the industry.
And Jordan is one of a very long list of Nova's clients.
Mike Ditka, Gail Sayers, Walter Payton, Dan Hampton, David Beckham, Dr. J.
Well, yeah, we don't have time to hear all of them. There are hundreds for whom she did millions and millions of dollars in deals.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Mario Andretti.
The athletes' agents, the ad agencies, and corporate brands who negotiated with Nova knew that they couldn't get anything over on this woman.
I think I was the only woman for a long time.
But they knew she was fair, thorough, there'd be no surprises, and most of all, trustworthy.
It was very common for people to steal athletes from agents. So I had to make his agent feel secure that I was not going to try to interrupt his relationship.
And many of her relationships evolved from client to close friend, such as Bart Starr.
I represented Bart exclusively for almost 35 years before he got sick.
And when Nova got sick 14 years ago when an aortic dissection nearly killed her, there at her hospital bedside was her friend, the Green Bay legend, and Gail Sayers.
I could hardly talk. And I said, Gail, what are you doing here? He said, Nova, you've taken care of me for 25 years. Now it's my turn.
Nova worked on some iconic commercial campaigns. And her favorite?
Hanes underwear that included Michael Jordan, Boomer Esiason, Steve Largent, Howie Long, and Joe Montana.
Congratulations on an incredible career, Nova. Oh, and the Business of Food connection? Nova is one of the make-ahead mashed potato ladies whose recipes blew up our website last Thanksgiving. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Up next is Ismat Mangla, the chief executive or the executive editor at MagnifyMoney.com. A few things I want to talk to you about, Ismat. First, what is Magnify Money? What do you all do?
Hi, thanks so much for having me. Yeah, MagnifyMoney.com is a website geared to basically helping folks build wealth, connecting you to financial advisors, giving you advice on how to build your portfolio, best save your money, all that good stuff.
It's funny because
it's useful right now.
Yeah, well, particularly now because I think a lot of people are chasing a better offer, a bigger dollar. But your website has an article that says 67% of workers would rather stay where they are, right?
Yeah, so this is a survey we did of American workers. You know, there's been all this talk about the Great Resignation. So we wanted to ask people really just like, how do they feel about their jobs and are they interested in, switching jobs? And what we found was so interesting was that 2/3 of the folks that we surveyed said that they would rather switch jobs internally rather than leave their company. And if they were six-figure earners, they were even more likely to want to stay within their current company.
Did that surprise you?
You know, we've heard so much about people wanting to move jobs in this environment, and we've certainly seen it. It's not to say that it hasn't happened, but I do think that there's something to be said for kind of understanding the environment that you're working in and not necessarily wanting to lose that. You know, if people are happy with the culture and the climate of the company that they're in, it can be very risky to leave that for the unknown. I mean, basically, it's like you go with the devil you know, right? So, yes, you could get a job at another company that maybe pays you a little bit more, but at what cost? Like, it may not be as great of an environment, or it may be more demanding than you expected, or any number of things. So,
yeah,
people like to be comfortable where they are.
I chuckle at the description of an employer as the devil you know, but I know what you mean. What are the things that people value at work then? If I'm the boss, what should I provide? What do the employees value the most?
Yeah, employees are definitely looking for promotions, higher salary, we asked what matters more between a job title and a salary, and 83% of workers chose their salary, right? The salary is the thing that's going to help you boost your savings accounts, boost your quality of life. So good wages are certainly at the top of the list. But, of course, other things that people really value are having a good, sort of retirement plan, having a 401k match, for example, good health care. Obviously, in this country, our health care is still tied to our employment, so health care is a big factor. And then a couple of other things include sort of having good work-life balance, good company culture, and then the big one I'll say right now, the ability to work remotely. As we've seen, the pandemic has certainly changed the way that people think about remote work, and more and more employees want that option.
Yeah, I guess I'm not surprised, but I mean, really, at this day and age, you want health coverage, you want good health insurance. That's number two on the list, and a 401k match, and as generous as it could be. I noticed way down on the list, I've just got a minute left here, but it's the first time I've ever seen that as even a benefit listed. I want to make sure I'm reading that correctly. It says abortion travel benefits. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, look, with the reversal of Roe, a lot of companies in this country are saying, hey, if you live in a state where abortion is not possible, then some companies have come out and said, you know what, we'll pay for you if you need that kind of health care, if you need to travel to another state to get that type of care, we'll pay for it. And so, yeah, this is the first time we're seeing it because there was never, you know, it wasn't really an issue before. No matter what side you are on that debate, you know, people are finding that that is a benefit, especially for companies that are headquartered in states where, you know, where abortion is not an, is not accessible.
Yeah. Here in Illinois, it means that states around us only have to travel one state. But for some people, it will be several hundred miles in a few states. So that's a startling realization. And that's all the time we have
today.
And that
can be very expensive, right? So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, an expensive benefit for sure, or at least an expensive cost for somebody to bear on their own. Ismat Mangla is the executive editor at MagnifyMoney.com. Let's talk again, Ismat. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great one.